was doing some research on baseball, and it so often happens with several of the books I've written. I started off doing one thing, and, you know, this particular aspect of topic, I realized I need to get an answer to this before I can do anything else. And so, you know, after 5 years, you know, I finally got the answer that I wanted, by which time I was thoroughly tired of the rest of the project, of course. But the basic problem was that, there was a series of books on the history of the Negro Leagues, many of them very much romanticized. And then there was, you know, the history of Major League Baseball and, what was called the Golden Age, which was, the late 40s through about 1960. But there was nothing that really tied together the history of integration with the history of the Negro Leagues or really addressed the issue of race. And so I put that together.
You focus on the American League primarily here. And, of course, most of what people know about integration of baseball comes from Jackie Robinson and, of course, the Brooklyn Dodgers and Branch Rickey. The American League and the players who broke the color barrier there, including Larry Doby, the first one to do so, always seemed to me to be a bit more of a footnote in history. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. And that's one of the reasons I chose to do the American League. Frankly, to start with, I've always been an American League fan, so it's just my natural orientation. But, the story always was the National League was far more aggressive in signing black players than the American League. And I wanted to know why and, kinds of thought processes were going on. And so I decided that it would be a much more effective way of treating the larger issue of race in American history if I looked at people who were more reluctant. And so that's why I ended up doing the American League.
I think one of the more surprising things to people might be that the last team to integrate came from an area that people would not expect, and that was Boston.
Yeah, well, Boston was the only major city that did not have a Negro League team. The black population of Boston was comparatively small compared to the other northeastern cities, so it made a little bit of sense. But what most people really don't know is that Boston could have been the first. They tried out Jackie Robinson before he signed with Branch Rickey. And, it was kind of a farce, to be honest with you, what they did. But they could have been the first. But supposedly the owner, Tom Yawkey, didn't want to be first, and he certainly succeeded. He was last.
Certainly you know a lot about baseball, and you know what this period as well. What really came as a surprise to you?
Well, what struck me more than anything else was, you know, that the American League, you know, they were the upstart league. They started out in 1901, and, they wanted to address problems that had come into organized baseball. The National League had become very complacent, and the game was getting very ugly, to be honest with you. And they wanted to create a more family kind of atmosphere, and so they were kind of rebels. They wanted to make changes, and they succeeded in doing so. And then, of course, in the 1920s, when the great change in baseball took place with Babe Ruth, and they were at the forefront of that. So for the first 50 years or so, the American League was by far the more pioneering league. But by the late 40s, early 50s, they'd become very reactionary because a lot of the guys who had done all that rebelling all those years ago, they were still there. Now they had become very conservative and very reluctant to make any changes at all.
We're talking with Bob McGregor. He's an emeritus professor of history at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also written a new book, A Calculus of Color, The Integration of Baseball's American League. We've talked about the American League, talked about the National League, but maybe we didn't get into as much here as been the Negro Leagues. And while this was such an advance for African Americans, not just in baseball, but in society, to see this color line broken, it also meant the demise of what had been a pretty successful black-run institution, the Negro Leagues.
Yes, very much so. One of the issues that, black people such as Dubois and others who were trying to promote black culture and black economics, said that in order for blacks to succeed, they had to establish their own enterprises, and the Negro Leagues were far and away the most successful of those enterprises. But the problem was that during the 1930s, during the Depression, there was so little money around that most of the Negro League teams ended up being owned by racketeers. And so when it came time for integration to begin, Branch Rickey, when he signed Jackie Robinson, refused to give any money to the Kansas City Monarchs, saying that, you know, that they weren't really a business enterprise, they were a racket. And, you know, that set a very nasty precedent, which I'm at least happy to say that Bill Veeck, who was the first one to pioneer integration in the American League, he set a different precedent. He paid the Newark Eagles for Larry Doby. It wasn't as much probably as he was worth, but at least they got something.
You also touch on that era in time and look at today's baseball a little bit as well. And it's safe to say that racism, maybe not quite as blatantly, still exists in the professional sports world and certainly in baseball?
Yeah. It's a kind of issue that's never apparently going to go away. I always told my students when I was teaching that you can't understand American history unless you at least try to understand race. It's just an essential part of who we are, and it's just something that's not going to go away. And it's also a much more complicated thing than it appears. You know, you think race, and you think, well, skin color, but it's far more complicated than that because, you know, there's a whole set of cultural assumptions that go with it. And so today when you see, you know, race problems, more often than not, it could be between the American black players and, you know, the black Latino players as much as between, you know, whites and blacks. So, you know, it's a far more complicated thing, and it was from the very beginning. One of my favorite examples, in the early days of the Cleveland Indians, after they had integrated, they had two young players. One was Minnie Minoso, who, of course, became very famous with the White Sox, and the other was Harry Simpson. Simpson was from Georgia. Minoso was from Cuba. And basically, Harry Simpson told Minnie Minoso that he was not black, which certainly surprised Minoso. And Minoso pointed out that he was subject to the same kinds of, you know, discrimination that Simpson was subject to. But Simpson said, no, you're not black because you're not an American black. You have not had our experiences. It's different for you. So it's a far more complicated kind of thing than what you might expect.
Let me ask, when it comes to the players in the American League that broke the color line, maybe in some cases, maybe there was one player or just a couple of players on some of these American League teams. Did they face the same type of abuse that Jackie Robinson did, or had that waned a bit because Robinson had already crossed that line?
Not really. I mean, Larry Doby was very much the subject of the same kinds of abuse, and it really affected him. In his autobiography, Bill Veeck talks about how he kind of wished that Larry Doby had not been the first, not because he wasn't a great player, but he could have been a much better player if he'd been just a little bit later when some of the abuse had kind of died away, because it really did affect him very much so. And then, you know, when subsequent teams began to organize, you know, that they all had the same kinds of problems. I mean, Pumpsy Green was the last player to integrate with the Red Sox, and he said that, "I never felt comfortable in the entire time that I was there. I was always, you know, subject to that extra scrutiny."
And that was, what, about a dozen years after Robinson had already started with the Dodgers, right?
Yeah, it was 1959. The rest of the Red Sox, you know, they were kind of cold, except for Ted Williams. I mean, God bless Ted Williams. I mean, he was the one player who said, you know, come on, kid, we'll play catch. You know, you're going to be my guy. And Williams really helped Green. But the rest of the players were pretty much indifferent, and there was a lot of hostility in a lot of locker rooms.
Baseball gets lauded quite often by historians when they look back because of Jackie Robinson, because of the integration, saying that baseball was far ahead of society at that time and really sort of led the way. But when you look at the American League, when you look at also this slow process of integration that took place even after Robinson entered, is it deserving of those kudos that baseball often gets?
To some degree, I would say yes. You know, the early pioneers, Bill Veeck and Branch Rickey, I mean, they were very brave. you can divide it into three kind of mini eras, if you will. I mean, there's the first one, Doby signs with Cleveland and Robinson signs with Dodgers. And that kind of came to a kind of a sad end in the American League because the second team to integrate was the St. Louis Browns, who did it for all the wrong reasons. They were just desperate because, you know, they were just losing money. It was just, you know, just leaking out from all the pores in the organization. And so they figured, well, we'll sign a couple of black guys, and so all the black people in St. Louis will come to see us. Well, they didn't do their homework. They signed two guys who really were not much help to them, and they only lasted 5 weeks, and they were gone. So it really set integration back quite a bit, you know, because, you know, at the end of 1947, Cleveland was the only team that had done it successfully in the American League. And then, you know, you have a very slow, you know, kind of reaction to it. And then when the Civil Rights Movement really gets rolling in the mid-50s, that's when you see several American League teams capitulate, including the Yankees, which were the most important team because, you know, they were the richest team and the most visible team. And everybody understood that, well, the Yankees do it, it's for real. But they were more reacting to what was going on outside than, you know, doing it for, you know, for reasons integral to their own organization. And then the last two holdouts were Detroit and Boston. And, you know, I mean, they did it basically because they were forced to, you know, they really had no choice.